What are church elders responsible for? How can we build trust between pastors and elders? And how can we hold one another accountable? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February is titled Pastors and Elders, Caring for the Church and One Another. You can check it out at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Pastors and Elders by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, Pastors and Elders. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Well, with the Obama administration's announcement that through Health and Human Services, it will be required that religious organizations, as they are employers, will through their health care plans be required 1 year from now about to finally comply and support birth control, there's been a firestorm, not as big as one might expect, but certainly a firestorm among Roman Catholics in America. It was kind of fueled a little bit, at least in the mind of the press, by letters that were read recently on Sunday mornings from bishops to their various dioceses, talking to them, explaining it to them, and then calling them to action. But is this only a Catholic issue? Joining us to talk about the conscience rights of American Catholics, Robert Morrison. He's senior fellow for policy studies at the Family Research Council based in Washington, D.C., formerly served as the executive director of the Office of Government Information for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. He's authored a recent column for National Review Online titled Why This Lutheran Defends Catholics' Conscience Rights. Robert, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hello, Todd. It's nice to be with you.
Is this only a Catholic issue?
Certainly not. Certainly not. It is a matter of the gravest concern for all Americans, and I would even include Americans who are not religious believers, because the fundamental principle here is that the government can basically order you and direct you and tell you to violate your conscience.
You have said recently in National Review Online that the Obama administration is acting in a radical fashion here. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean by that is, you know, I compared President Obama's record on this question to that of Franklin Roosevelt, Harry Truman, Lyndon Johnson, John F. Kennedy, and certainly to Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton. Not only is it not only are you seeing that there are Republicans and Democrats clashing over this, but President Obama, I believe, is out of line with the whole 20th century history of and modern history of his own party. The presidents of his party would never have taken such a radical stance, I believe.
What's different here? What is we obviously can't read the president's heart, but what is the kind of the philosophical or the political calculus here? And many have asked, why in the world would you do this when you're facing re-election in less than 10 months? What do you think the calculus is?
Well, I think the calculus is in order to get reelected, President Obama may feel that he has to get his most devoted followers' enthusiastic support. They've been somewhat disappointed with him, so they say. So he is trying to get the pro-abortion people's most enthusiastic support. Planned Parenthood types, he has to get their most enthusiastic support. So you see, on anything else that he can compromise on, he may have compromised in the past, but Planned Parenthood funding, for example, is non-negotiable. That's the first thing that he tells Speaker Boehner when they get into their White House sessions. Not a penny of Planned Parenthood funding. And then he comes along with something like this, and it's the media is calling it a contraceptive mandate, but it goes far beyond that. Far beyond that, because A, sterilizations are included. Sterilizations, that's not contraception, that is a permanent life-altering change. And secondly, abortion-producing drugs are included. So it goes beyond just birth control as commonly understood, but it extends even to the point of abortion-producing drugs. You have to dispense them. You have to agree to have them covered in your health insurance policy.
Another difference here, Bob, it seems, is that for the president to walk into a meeting with the Speaker of the House and say, look, I'm not going to budge on what's in place for Planned Parenthood funding, that's one thing. But this isn't defending something that's already in place. This is an aggressive move, it appears, against a pretty large segment of the voting populace.
Well, it's, what I tried to emphasize is that there are millions of us who are not Catholic who look to a Catholic hospital for that sanctity of life that they uphold. That sanctity of life that they uphold. That is one of the reasons that we choose for our own family members to go to a Catholic hospital, because we know we can rely on them on that much, despite our great theological differences in so many areas. But on that question, we know that we have that in common. My boss at the time that I worked for the Missouri Synod was Dr. Ralph Bowman. And Dr. Bowman talked about ethical ecumenism. He was not trying to, fudge the differences on theology between the Missouri Synod and the Roman Catholic Church. But he said on these ethical core issues, on assisted suicide, on destruction of human life in the womb, on religious liberty, there were great commonalities. And so at that point, we were very cooperative on these questions. But I can tell you, going all the way back to the 1980s, Todd, there was an aggressive drive to get rid of the Catholic bishop's tax-exempt status by the pro-abortion forces. Why did they want to do that? Because the Catholic bishops, the Catholic Church at that time, was one of the most prominent voices standing up against abortion on demand. And that's why their tax-exempt status was being threatened regularly through those years. So I see this as another comparable move, on the part of the Obama administration, which is staffed with radically pro-abortion people.
Joe is listening in St. Louis. Joe, thanks for waiting.
Hi, I wonder if your guest thinks that this is a matter that would point towards civil disobedience, and if so, if he thinks any institution basically has the guts to do it or not.
Well, thanks. That's a great question, Joe. Thank you very much. What do you think, Bob?
I think you're hearing, I heard today in a meeting that 190 out of the some 220 Catholic bishops in this country had come very close to that line. They are basically saying, we will not obey this unjust and unconstitutional directive. Now, when we talk about civil disobedience, this, of course, was the core issue for Dr. Martin Luther King. Dr. Martin Luther King, and I recommend everybody go back to the letter from the Birmingham jail. An unjust law is no law at all, said Dr. King, and this is clearly an unjust law. But I think before you get to that point, there would probably be a challenge of it and a court case of it to challenge it. But before we get going into court, President Obama, of course, is staffing the courts with nothing but radically pro-abortion people. Before we get to that point, there needs to be, I think, an outcry by people of faith from pro-life denominations across the board, and for others who see the religious liberty question, even if they don't share our pro-life convictions, they can see the religious liberty component of this.
One last question on this, and I guess it's kind of an overtly political question, but do you think, I think that President Obama is a very bright man, and he certainly has done the math already. Do you think he has calculated that he can win re-election in November without a lot of Roman Catholic voters that otherwise, without this issue to motivate them one way or the other, probably would have voted for him, and without those evangelicals that emerged when he was elected who were willing to vote for him as well because they thought that his approach was more practical or something like that?
Well, Douglas Kamek is a famous example of what you're talking about, Todd. He served in the Reagan administration to select judges. He was trusted by us. He was highly respected by us. And I know because I served on committees that reviewed judges' records or prospective judges' records that as recently as 5 years ago, 6 years ago, if George W. Bush had named Douglas Kamek to the U.S. Supreme Court, we all would have cheered. And yet, Douglas Kamek in 2008 came out for Barack Obama for president. Douglas Kamek today says he is most disillusioned in what President Obama has done. Most disillusioned. Now, that's significant, I think. There are a host of folks that you're describing who supported President Obama out of good conscience. They believe that his rhetoric of uniting us, bringing us together, would be positive. They look to his ideal family relation, you know, his model family life. They were very, very hopeful about what this young and charismatic figure could do for the country. The problem is that many of us who are watching Senator Barack Obama knew that his record was the most liberal in the U.S. Senate and that his record on the abortion question was the most radical of any man who has ever run or woman who has ever run for president. He actually was more radical than Hillary Clinton, and that was difficult to be.
With only about 30 seconds here, are we looking at 1 year from now, Catholic hospitals going out of business because of this directive?
No, I certainly hope that would never be the case. I think what we're looking at is a staunch defense. I think they will defend themselves. I think they will be defended by tens of thousands of us. I think there will be mass demonstrations. I think this would be very, very divisive in our country, extremely divisive in our country. I don't see them closing. I think their lights will burn brightly, as I put it in my column, and they'll burn brightly for life. I think they will resist, and they will be sustained.
Bob Morrison is Senior Fellow for Policy Studies at the Family Research Council based in Washington, D.C., formerly served as the Executive Director of the Office of Government Information for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. He has authored a recent column for National Review Online titled, Why This Lutheran Defends Catholics' Conscience Rights. You can read it under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Bob, thank you very much for your time.
God, thank you, and God bless you.
When we come back, we're going to be talking with Eric Metaxas. Now, he is he's called by National Review Online a little-known historical biographer. Not little-known anymore because last week he was at the National Prayer Breakfast. He spoke right before the president. He had a lot of things to say. Some are saying directed at the president, speaking truth to power. We'll see what he said and why he said it after this. If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most radio talk shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you to pay for the production, salary, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio. The address? LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend on you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.
Theology for blue collar, white collar, and clerical collar. You're listening to Issues Etc.
You can make a difference.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Sometimes it's just a matter of taking the time to inform others. For instance, Lifeway Resources, a Christian bookseller owned by the Southern Baptist Convention, wanted to help fight breast cancer. They recently began selling pink Bibles, with proceeds going to the Susan G. Komen for the Cure Foundation. However, dozens of pro-life individuals contacted the company to inform them that the foundation donates money to Planned Parenthood. Upon confirming this connection, Lifeway discontinued the project. Company president Tom Rayner said that even an indirect relationship with Planned Parenthood violated his organization's core values.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.